Welcome to the Felt Recoil Podcast, episode number 145. 145 times we have gathered together to try to reason our way through this crazy world. My name's Chris, flying solo this week. Patrick called away on very important business, very last minute. We didn't know it was going to happen, but he's gone. He's been called to Syria to deal with the Islamic radicalization problem. Should be back by Tuesday. Or he's messing with planograms. Either way, equally important. So you're stuck with me. Thanks for being here as always. Make sure you find more information about this podcast at FeltRecoilShow.com on the World Wide Web, FeltRecoilShow.com. You can link over to our Facebook and Instagram pages there, as well as the YouTube channel, and find out more about what we do when we don't do this, okay? And more often than not, nearly every story covered here is linked through our Facebook page, so it's worth going over and giving that a like. We're on Instagram as well, if you're into that. Let's start, as we always do, with this week's charity of choice. It's Operation Enduring Warrior. Operation Enduring Warrior is a veteran-founded nonprofit whose mission is to honor, empower, and motivate our nation's wounded military and law enforcement veterans through physical, mental, and emotional rehabilitation. It is 100% volunteer-run. Your donation goes directly towards operational support of the organization and our various programs. What all do they do? I couldn't tell you everything, but I can tell you one thing that I saw with my own eyes. That was awesome. These are a lot of combat injured veterans. A lot of them are missing limbs, some of them multiple limbs, and they go out and they run the mud runs and these massive endurance challenges that you see all around the country. They show up and run them together in full kit with gas masks on, bump helmets on their head. It's incredibly intimidating to see them come over the crest of a hill toward you. It's really hard to fathom until you see it yourself. It's impossible to explain. But they do it all to kind of build that morale back underneath those who need it and to give them a way forward and to show them that there's hope to the future as well. So the programs, they help participants overcome adversity and hardship through their programs. And you can be a part of helping with that by visiting enduringwarrior.org, enduringwarrior.org. Okay, there's a lot to get to. I don't want to gloss over too much stuff. There is an Epstein update. Don't know if you knew that was possible because, you know, he's been dead as long as he's been dead. But there is an update. Turns out the prison guards have now struck a deal to avoid prison time, because who wants that when you were a prison guard, even though you deserve it? They were tasked with guarding Epstein when he, air quotes, committed suicide. They falsified records, and they were asleep. They were asleep, and they lied about it. And TheBlaze.com gives us more detail, saying that authorities say Tova Noel and Michael Thomas struck a deferred prosecution agreement with prosecutors after being charged with lying on prison records. Epstein was awaiting trial at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in New York City when he was found unresponsive in his cell in August of 2019. He was under suicide watch and was supposed to be closely monitored to prevent the possibility of his, air quotes, taking his own life. Under the agreement with the Justice Department, Noel and Thomas will be subject to a supervised release with will complete 100 hours of community service and have to cooperate fully with a continuing investigation. Praise be. The letter from federal prosecutors said the two admitted that they willfully and knowingly completed materially false count and round slips regarding required counts and rounds. So they were sleeping, they were watching TV, they were doing what it is people who are bored at work do. And then they lied about it as Epstein showed up dead. The incident was blamed on a persistent problem of staffing shortages at the Bureau of Prisons. Not staffing shortages, just the wrong staff. They had the people, they just didn't have the right people. Ergo, these two. So, fun for them that really, I mean, if you think about it, as much as we joke about Epstein not killing himself, and again, somebody killed Epstein, be it himself or be it another inmate or a former president's wife, who knows? Somebody killed this man. And even if it's himself, that's still on these people who did nothing about it. But don't worry, they'll walk scot-free. Because why? Who knows? Who knows? Could we put our tinfoil hats on for a second and then step forward and say, maybe they know who did it and they're willing to talk about that. Whatever conspiracy transpired that led to Epstein's death, maybe these two know all the details and they're more than happy to share. And that is how they're skating free. Either way, they deserve to do some time. Not 100 days of supervised release, but hard jail time surrounded by the very people they used to guard. Because to me, the problem is, when you are the law, the problem has to, the example has to be set that you're never above the law. You're equal to, if not lesser than. You're held to a higher standard because you demand all of society live up to a higher standard, right? It's like the the joke of Kamala Harris acting like she smoked weed, even though she locked up a significant number of young black men for doing the exact same thing, and now wants to advocate as if it should be legal, and anybody convicted of smoking the weed or selling the weed should be let out on the streets, no questions asked. Which, by the way, quick diversion, if you think that legalizing marijuana is such a great idea, go watch Sasquatch on Hulu. Go watch Sasquatch, and don't watch it for the story the melodramatic narrator tells, because he is very melodramatic. It's essentially three episodes of him creating a story that was never really there. But what he does tell you is how dangerous it is to go into the Emerald Triangle, the three counties in California that grow marijuana, both legally and illegally. Okay, they're both up there, but it is deadly either way you slice it. If you start infringing on their territory, you die. And that's the premise of the documentary, is three migrants are found dead, brutally murdered, and it's used as a way to say that Sasquatch did it. It's a tactic to scare people out of the area so they don't come there and try and plant marijuana, even if they're doing it legally. What the people up there growing the weed want you to believe is that there's a Sasquatch that will dismember you and leave your body strewn all along the ground. Either way, we're back to, here's people who, Kamala Harris and these prison guards, these people are tasked with enforcing the law, and somehow they believe that makes them above the law, and that can't be the case. As an officer of the law, you should be held to a higher standard. You should hold yourself to a higher standard. Speaking of officers of the law, by the way, segue, we meant to touch on it last week. Kind of got lost in the weeds and in the discussion of Patrick's mom attacking those nurses, like Miley Cyrus style. And SCOTUS has a very important ruling that follows up on a story we talked about before. This was Coniglio versus Strom, a case that made its way to the Supreme Court. If you remember, the details were essentially that a husband and wife had an argument. The husband left to cool off. The wife called the police and said, "I'm worried about my husband. I think he might be suicidal." The husband comes back to the house. "I'm not suicidal, nothing to see here, move on." The police start asking about guns in the house. He's hesitant to speak to them. They assure him they won't take any guns. He kind of refuses. The police then go to the wife and say, "He said you could tell us where the guns were," and she does. So the police lied twice, not a good idea. They seize this man's guns, no warrant, no probable cause, complete violation of number 2 and number 4, right? And I would almost say number 1. Like, never forget, this is the thing in dealing with police officers. You shouldn't be overboard with this, but with anybody in the legal system, especially politicians, more so than police officers, you need to be bold when you talk to these people, bold and respectful, but understand that you have a First Amendment right to petition the government. For whatever your grievances are, you have a right to go to them and say, "This is why I disagree and why I think you owe me for whatever the grievance is. This is how we make it right." You have that right. God gave you that right. So don't be intimidated at city council. Don't be intimidated when those people come around and you go, "Oh man, they were elected. They must be important." They're not that important. They just convinced a lot of people to vote for them. Ergo, because they do it once, then their name becomes familiar and they win and they win and they win again. Lindsey Graham is a fine example of that. He's done very little that anybody could name off the top of their head that was exceptional for the state of South Carolina. But he has such strong name recognition. He has such political clout. He has such political capital. He's been there so long that he kind of wins by default. I mean, he had this unknown lobbyist, Jamie Harrison, come out of nowhere and really give Lindsey Graham a run for his money because Lindsey Graham's lazy and he always expects to win. So now Lindsey Graham, much like every other politician in the world, is going around doing this damage control because the world got rocked in the last election cycle, right? But my point is, if most of us, myself included, if we were to meet someone of that stature face-to-face, your initial thing is to feel somewhat intimidated or excited. There's almost a celebrity status to these people. But you kind of have to push that aside. Remember, they're just like you and me. They're just like us. Okay, they understand the system a little bit better. And furthermore, they have a higher level of accountability to you and I. See, if I have a disagreement with my neighbor about the way things should be, my neighbor and I can politely disagree with that. I'm not responsible for the way things are. It wasn't my decision to vote that way, and neither is he. But when you run into your senator or your representative or whomever it is, those people have an obligation to you that your neighbor doesn't have. So whatever these arguments are that you're more than willing to have on Facebook, make sure you're showing up and you're more than willing to have it face-to-face with these people, all right? Back to the point. I think 1, 2, and 4 are all violated for Mr. Coniglia in this case. The Supreme Court has agreed, according to Ammoland, in a case argued in front of the Supreme Court that could affect red flag laws across the country, SCOTUS ruled unanimously that the community caretaking exception does not apply inside the home. The community caretaking exception, by the way, is when there's a belief that a police officer is interacting with someone who has something or there is something that could affect the welfare of the community. They may be allowed to seize that or, you know, detain that person or whatever for the sake of community caretaking. Mr. Coniglia, they're going to recap the case, which we just did. We won't worry too much about that. But remember, the police violated the Fourth Amendment and its due process. Anti-gun groups condemned the decision from the court, according to Ammoland, and claimed it makes people less safe. Gun rights groups hailed the decision as a victory for freedom. One gun group, Gun Owners of America, filed an amicus brief in the case on behalf of Mr. Coniglia. They celebrated the decision, saying, quote, "The Supreme Court smacked down the hopes of gun grabbers across the nation. The Michael Bloombergs of the world would have loved to see the Supreme Court police grant police the authority to confiscate firearms without a warrant. But the Supreme Court unanimously ruled that the Fourth Amendment protections in the Bill of Rights protect gun owners from such invasions into their homes." Here's a question. And again, real happy that this happened. But what is the difference between that and Oregon mandating vaccines for people who want to go to church? If you want to go to church in the state of Oregon now, you have to have the vaccine. Not a joke. Hotair.com. Karen Townsend with the article saying most states are moving away from mandatory coronavirus mitigation measures now that the pandemic's in its waning days. Oregon is bucking the trend. In order for a person to enter a business, workplace, or church without a face mask, proof of vaccination must be provided. Even though Oregon lifted its mask mandate for the fully vaccinated, proof of vaccinations will be the key to taking advantage of a maskless face. What other things, it's just amazing to me, what other things are your inalienable rights that the government will next step on and squash and tell you you have to have this vaccine in order to do it? To vote? Could a state tell people, think about this, you think voter ID laws are racist? What happens when we say you have to have access to proper health care to vote? What's harder, getting into the DMV or getting into a doctor's office? It's coming. We know it's coming. And they'll do that, I think. I could see the voting thing happening because so many people like myself who are hesitant to the vaccine tend to lean to the right on the political spectrum. The people, like we talked about last week, the left has proven that the masks are an ideological warfare. It's all partisan. AOC, David Hogg, all these people saying, well, I'll wear my mask because it's the right thing to do and it proves I'm not a conservative. Okay. Okay. Well, where does it stop? Where does it stop? There's no difference between the police taking your guns or anything else, by the way, anything else from you without a warrant. There's no difference between that and Oregon saying that you have to have the vaccine to get into church. So you can see where we're headed, but I want to look back for a second because I want to say how right we were. How right we were. I hope you subscribe to the Felt Recoil podcast. I hope every week you and your friends get around whatever podcast listening device you own, a tin can with a string, whatever it is. You pour your favorite beverage and you listen every Tuesday to the latest episode so that you can go around and tell your friends, see, I told you, this is what's going to happen. Just wait, wait, wait. And then, like us, you'll get to come back later and say, see, we told you. We were right all along. We were right all along. This is a post from our Facebook page, authored by yours truly. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. March 18th, 2020. March 18th, 2020. Just over a year ago. Facts indicate that the coronavirus is biological warfare made in China. Here are the facts. What say you? Number one. November 2019, first case of coronavirus occurs in the, and this might be butchering it, Hubei province, H-U-B-E-I province, China, home of Wuhan University. Despite rapid spread, China and the World Health Organization falsely claim the coronavirus cannot be spread through person-to-person contact. January 2020, the U.S. Department of Justice arrests Dr. Charles Lieber, the chair of Harvard University's Chemistry and Chemical Biology Department, and two Chinese nationals, charging them with aiding the People's Republic of China through their work with the Wuhan University of Technology. One of the Chinese nationals was carrying 21 vials of biological research with him through Boston's Logan International Airport when he was arrested. In March 2020, the United States Border Patrol announces it has detained more than 320 Chinese nationals attempting to illegally enter the United States through the southern border since January of that same year. Countries around the world enter into a panic state, shutting down commerce and flirting with recession. Panic public creates strain on healthcare facilities and resources. We have individual links for every point we made, including Vox, the Washington Examiner, Justice Department's website, and LiveScience.com. So back in March of 2020, we here at Felt Recoil were saying to you, it's biological warfare developed in China. Be ready. Be ready. And now, and by the way, at the time, Fauci and all the people at national institutes are going, no, we don't know that. We don't know. We doubt it. It's probably bats. Maybe it wasn't bats. Definitely doesn't. We think it developed in an animal and then crossed species, right? When asked about the possibility of virus escaping the lab after scientists brought it inside, Fauci says, that means it was in the wild to begin with. That's why I don't get what they're talking about, why I don't spend a lot of time going on this circular argument. If you look at the evolution of the virus in bats and what's out there now, it's very, very strongly leaning towards this virus could not have been artificially or deliberately manipulated. That's Fauci talking to National Geographic 1 year ago. If you look at the evolution of the virus, very, very strongly leaning that it could not have been artificially or deliberately manipulated the way the mutations have naturally evolved. Here's Fauci talking with, where was this from? I have to look this back up. A recent interview, Fauci was asked by PolitiFact editor Katie Sanders whether he's still confident that COVID-19 developed naturally, okay? Did it develop naturally, Dr. Fauci? That's what she's about to ask.
And like you said, there's a lot of cloudiness around the origins of COVID-19 still.
Sure is.
So I wanted to ask, are you still confident that it developed naturally?
No, actually, that's the point that I said. And I think the real unfortunate aspect of what Senator Paul did is he was conflating research in a collaborative way with Chinese scientists, which was, you know, you'd almost have to say if we did not do that, we would almost be irresponsible, because SARS-CoV-1 clearly originated in China.
Oh, yes, yes, it did. We were
fortunate to escape a major pandemic. So we really had to learn a lot more.
We didn't escape a major pandemic with SARS. It killed a whole bunch of people. Killed many more people than COVID has in the United States, right? Are we still there? I think so. Meaning, we're playing politics with American lives and with science and with everything else he's played politics with all along anyway. So there's Fauci now, not convinced it wasn't created in a lab somewhere. Yeah, who knows? He's basically shrugging his shoulders. Who knows, boss? Who knows? Can you imagine that scenario where your boss has asked you time and time again for whatever the thing is. Hey, did you get that thing done? And for the last year, you've been saying to your boss, listen to me. Listen to me real carefully. I love you. I mean that. I'm working on it. I'm working on it. Got a lot going on, but that thing, working on it. Working on it. He says, well, listen, I'm going to need an answer as soon as possible. Listen, boss, you pay me $430,000 a year. I'm on it. I'm on it. 10 grand per paycheck I get, right? Cool. I'm on it. I got you. Love you. Mean it. And then a year later, your boss is like, hey, that thing, you've been telling me almost all day, every day, you're working on it. Like, where are we at? And you just shrug your shoulders. Ah, who knows? Who knows? I am no closer, none, to an answer for you than we were. But just so you know, I think I did 60 interviews with YouTubers this weekend about it, telling them that I don't know. So we're good. We're good. Circle back to it. But right now, we're good. TheBlaze.com has an article about Tom Cotton calling on the Biden administration, a lot of good this will do, to hold the Chinese Communist Party accountable for covering up the origins of COVID-19, as the hypothesis that the virus originated in a Wuhan virology lab is getting mainstream credibility among scientists. The Blaze says in an interview on Sunday Morning Futures on Fox News, Cotton discussed a letter he signed with seven other Republican lawmakers pressing the National Institutes of Health for answers on allegations that the U.S. funded gain-of-function research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology to make pathogens like SARS-CoV-2 deadlier or more easily transmissible. This is what, by the way, Fauci and Rand Paul had that exchange back and forth not so long ago. And it seemed to me what they were saying was that the National Institutes of Health was funding a scientist's research, and that scientist was then aiding the Chinese Communist Party with what he was learning through U.S. government research. And so Fauci wants to say, well, we weren't funding what they were doing over there. We were funding the guy that was helping them. And that's where he's really playing word games, as Cotton will say here in just a second. During a May 11th Senate hearing on the pandemic response, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases Director Dr. Anthony Fauci denied that NIH has ever funded gain-of-function research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Fauci said that $600,000 in NIH subgrants that were diverted to the Wuhan Institute of Virology by a nonprofit group called the EcoHealth Alliance were used to study coronaviruses in bats and were not used for gain-of-function research. There you go. On Sunday, Cotton told Fox News that Fauci was playing word games, saying, quote, Dr. Fauci has been to Congress, and he said this absolutely did not happen, but he's playing word games. So the money that the NIH gave went to an American organization, which turned around and gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to the Wuhan labs to investigate coronaviruses and, yes, to find ways to make them more contagious and more dangerous. So there's Fauci, who can't do the job he's supposed to be doing, who is then lying about the job he's doing and has no answer for the people who are asking him what it is exactly he's doing. The guy's job is to figure all of this out and help us. And all he's done so far is politicize everything. Politicize everything. He didn't like Trump. He made that clear as Trump was leaving office and as Biden was coming in. And he's kind of been in CYA mode since really day one of Biden. He quickly became a Biden advocate and just everything he could do to lick the boots of Biden and make sure, hey, I'm on your side now. I'm on your side now. There's a lot at play there. Nothing undoes what we said in March of last year. You can connect these dots. There's no such thing as a coincidence. By the way, speaking of coincidences, this is hers. Remember last week, I made a comment off the cuff about the fact that the next thing you're going to start hearing about is unvaccinated people developing mouth sores after spending time with vaccinated people. Happened to my family. It's happened to many people I know. Now, and this is crazy talk, but it's real. This is real stuff. So we have the mouth sores. Everybody knows that if you're not vaccinated, what's happening is vaccinated people are essentially shedding the vaccine, particles of the vaccine. And those of us who don't have the vaccine are picking them up. It's breaking our immune system down. We're developing these different reactions to it. By the way, here's a question to ponder about this vaccine. So we have all these coincidences happening. I have one important question for you to ponder, and I have a list of things to read to you that are just absolutely insane. Absolutely insane, and should give all of us pause on whether or not we take this vaccine. And I mean that sincerely. I'm not going to take it. It's just way too crazy. It's way too crazy for me. All right, here's the question. The American Red Cross says, if you get the vaccine, you cannot donate plasma. All right? It's on the American Red Cross's website. You can see the link on our Facebook page. You can't donate plasma through the Red Cross anymore if you get the vaccine. The reason is because the vaccine wears down the antibodies that are necessary to fight the COVID vaccine, right? Or, the coronavirus. So, meaning, if you donate plasma, they use that plasma on people who are really, really sick with the virus, and your blood plasma could transplant the antibodies into somebody else and help them get better. That's the way I understand it. Feel free to tell me if I'm wrong on that. Because if that's the case, it raises a really important question. What is better for society? That we get vaccinated and cannot help the most vulnerable that need it when the time comes. Meaning, I haven't heard, this would be an interesting thing to look into, would love to see a study. If there's an elderly person who needs plasma, are there negative reactions to the plasma to the degree that there's negative reactions to the vaccine? So what's better for society, that we get vaccinated and then we can't help the vulnerable, or that we don't get vaccinated and then we can help the vulnerable? Because then you can donate your plasma. That can be used to help those who need it. Now, you can still donate blood and all that. You cannot donate your plasma. Just an interesting question. Over the weekend, DC Drano on Instagram, he asked his audience, if you will, to start submitting their stories of dealing with vaccinated people. And boy, did they roll in. Men, listen to me. I'm going to put this delicately. But if the woman in your life begins acting untoward, and you check your calendar and you say to yourself, I don't know why she's so angry. I mean, it's the 5th. This usually happens around the 20th. Turns out, not a joke, thousands and thousands of women are reporting that they are unvaccinated, and then they're around vaccinated people, and it is changing their cycle dramatically by weeks. Some of them say now twice a month they have them, whereas before they had it 3 days every month. I know that might be too much information for you. You might have just turned this off. You won't hear what I have left to say. But that should really be just a cause for concern of anybody thinking about injecting themselves with this. Now, I get it. Some of us have things to do. Vaccine may be required. It's probably not going to hurt you. Not a big deal. Not a big deal. But what is this thing? What exactly is happening here? The CDC is now investigating mild reports of potential heart problems following COVID-19 vaccination. DC Drano, I'm going to start reading just quickly through some of these messages, then we'll move on. I'll get out of your hair. Here's one. I work as an RN reviewer for inpatient admissions. I've seen a 24-year-old admitted for a heart attack, an 18-year-old admitted for pulmonary embolus. I don't even know what that is. Pulmonary embolus. I've seen a 16-year-old admitted for a stroke. All have the history and physical and say X vaccine was 1 to 2 days ago, within a day or two. It's mind-blowing. This vaccine is being allowed. I can also tell you that the company that I review for is also reviewing and keeping track of everyone that's having a reaction or admitted because of it. Real-life story. After getting your second dose of the COVID-19 vaccination, my family friend suffered flu-like symptoms that turned into heart failure. Her heart stopped a number of times within 2 hours. She ended up on a crash cart headed toward the ICU. The reports are not mild. They are severe. Can we also talk about why unvaccinated women's cycles are all out of whack from being around a vaccinated person? I thought it was fake until it happened to me. The more I've talked to people about it, the more I'm hearing. One of my closest friends said literally 15 people have told her it's happened to them. I thought it was a far fetch, and then it happened to me. My school had a vaccination clinic. That same week, I had the worst cycle with clots and a nosebleed, which I'll never forget. Pretty sure my aunt passed from it, had it, and after a couple weeks ended up in the hospital with kidney problems. Then they had to go in for liver issues. Then everything went to hell. She passed away. Around the same time, my cousin had a heart attack and blood clots a couple of weeks after this. Next one. I'm not vaxxed yet, but everything has been getting closer and closer together as far as my cycles are concerned the last few months. Next one. Not to mention miscarriage. I had a perfectly healthy baby almost 2 years ago, found out I was pregnant, and just miscarried a few days ago at 10 weeks. No history of miscarriages, but I've heard this has been happening as well. I have heard that as well, by the way. My friends and I have been 2 to 3 weeks late since getting our second shots. Extreme cramping and pain beforehand, lasting 4 weeks. No fun. Guys, this affects all of us. It affects all of us. You can think you're immune to this, but it's coming back on you. All right. This guy says, it's giving me chills. My wife was late, and the other day she woke me up thinking she had a runny nose. Ended up a bad nosebleed, no apparent reason. On and on and on these stories go. You must go to our Facebook page. You go to FeltRecoilShow.com, click over to our Facebook page, and you can see DC Drano's bio there for Instagram. And you just click over to his bio, and on the front, where you can put highlights, he's put a testimonials tab, and you just click that tab, and you can give it a listen, okay? All right. By the way, U.S. intelligence says researchers at the Wuhan lab were hospitalized with COVID-like symptoms in the fall of 2019. Three researchers at the Wuhan Institute of Virology were sick enough with COVID-like symptoms in November of 2019 that they required hospitalization, according to an American intelligence report. That's from theblaze.com, first reported by the Wall Street Journal on Sunday. It adds weight to the Wuhan lab leak story, right? I mean, I'm telling you, the more and more you connect those dots, the more and more it looks like all of that is true. It's just true. Chinese biological warfare. And if it was, if it is, man, did it work. Man, did it work. Crashed economies, killed a lot of people, governments just stepping all over civil rights, no questions asked. Man, did it work. It's insane because it only worked because we allowed it to work that way. Like I said last time, by the way, I won't hear squat from any of these big government governors who are suddenly trying to act like they're cool with everything. Abbott in Texas, McMaster here in South Carolina. DeSantis, I'll do a little more homework on. I haven't yet, but he said no more lockdowns, which means there were lockdowns, right? Texas put a salon owner in jail over it. Where's the governor on that one? Stop with this garbage of you're coming back later to apologize for the things you've done. You should be ousted. The moment your people get a chance, you should be out. Out. Want nothing to do with you. Get out. All right. Okay. Okay. Here's one more question, and then I'm going to wrap it up. Why does Facebook not want people to talk about stopping the Jewish hate? If you're not aware, there's a rash of anti-Semitic violence across the United States by supporters of terrorism. People who love Hamas, which is a terrorist organization, are mad at Jews for fighting back against Hamas. It is cut and dry. There is no gray area on this issue. You're either pro-Hamas or you're pro-Israel. Okay? Hamas, bad guys. Israel, innocent people who are being slaughtered, and the world gave them a sliver of land and said, carve out a life for yourselves. Good luck to you. The world, here you go, this little bit. And then every country on their borders since then has been trying to annihilate them and eradicate them. And Americans here on our soil are saying they should die. There's a guy accused of beating up a Jewish man in New York City, called him a dirty Jew, and told the people that arrested him, I'd do it again. From TheBlaze.com, Wasim Awade, 23, held on $10,000 bail in connection to a Thursday attack and is accused of punching, kicking, and pepper spraying 29-year-old Joseph Bergen, as well as beating the victim with crutches. If I could do it again, I would do it again, he told one of his jailers, according to a prosecutor at the suspect's Saturday arraignment in Manhattan. Anti-Israel statement from Vanderbilt University student group. As the student government weeps for Palestinians and predictably fails to mention Hamas, rocket attacks, or terrorism. Vanderbilt University's student government was called out for issuing a decidedly anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian statement. The unsigned statement is curiously titled, In Solidarity with Students. In Solidarity with Students. The most blatantly anti-Israel sections of the statement are found on the second page, where Vanderbilt's student government catalogs deaths and destruction by Israel's, quote, occupying forces, and uses phrases such as indigenous Palestine, quote unquote, targeting Muslim Palestinians during the holy month of Ramadan, ethnic cleansing, and inhumane and cruel acts of war, supremacy, and genocide. In the wake of the student government statement, Vanderbilt's Hillel group put together a response on its own Instagram page saying, Vanderbilt Hillel strongly condemns the recently released biased statement from the Vanderbilt student government. Despite the claims to denounce anti-Semitism, their statement contributes to the continued erosion of Jewish students' sense of safety at Vanderbilt and has unleashed a torrent of offensive comments online. Anytime people say I'm pro-Palestine because Israel is an occupying force, that is anti-Semitism. That is the bigotry of saying Jews have no claim to the land and they have no right to exist. That's what they mean when they say it. The Jews have approached the table and asked for peace time and time and time again. Palestinians continue to say no, continue to launch rockets from civilian areas. They use children as shields. They launch from hospitals and schools and all that so that when the Jews respond and obliterate those buildings, they can say, see what they did, see what they did. There's the story of the Israeli forces getting on the phone with the Palestinian man who had kids in the building, and they said, we're about to knock the building down. You have to get those kids and get out of the building. And the man said, if the kids need to die, then they must die. That is the way terrorists think. That's the way they think. Because death to them is an honor. Martyrdom is the only assurance of salvation in the Muslim faith. There is no relationship between those people and their God. There's not. They pray to Muhammad. They pray toward the birthplace of Muhammad. The way into heaven is to die. That's it. That's it. There's no come into my heart and save me, forgive me my sins. You die, you die, you die. That is why they value death much more than they value their lives. And it's why they're so much more willing to die than people of Western cultures. It's just the way it is. Terrorists, 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 and thugs. All of them. Okay. Let's do our vote of the week, and then we'll be done.
I'm an ambitious officer.
One voter. Everybody knows the rules.
I need to be a part of the 100 Club.
Ah, yes. The 100 Club. From Judicial Watch, Hunter Biden, Secret Service records show, Hunter Biden took at least 23 flights through Joint Base Andrews. Why is that important? Why? Well, because it's the home of Air Force One and Two. According to Secret Service travel records obtained by Judicial Watch, then Vice President Joe Biden's son, Hunter, took 411 trips across 29 countries between 2009 and the middle of 2014. That includes 23 flights into or out of Joint Base Andrews, home to Air Force One and Air Force Two. These trips, which shed light on Hunter's involvement with his father, are revealed in Breaking the News, exposing the establishment media's hidden deals and secret corruption, a new book exploring the corruption that drove the established media to cover up the Hunter Biden scandal. What's not answered here, what I would be curious to know is, I mean, was he flying on Air Force One? Is that what that means? Is that why that's important? Was Hunter doing lines off the toilet seat in Air Force Two? I don't know. You see, there's a funny joke somewhere in there, by the way. The toilet of Air Force Two. Yeah, whatever. All right. Hey, come back next week, and we'll do it again. Next time, we'll get together and solve all the world's problems right here every Tuesday with a new episode of the Felt Recall Podcast.